This is FNX.
Listen to Shoot the Defense. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello, welcome to Shoot the Defense on FNX. I'm your host, Stel, and I'm joined by three co-hosts this evening. First of all, my co-host as ever, Mr. Yannickis J. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, not bad, mate. You alright?
Yes, my friend, you sound a lot more jovial this evening than last time.
Yeah, you might want to change it for a while.
Forgot what it was like, right?
Exactly. It's good for 4 goals. It's like, you know, must be Christmas or something coming up soon.
Oh, you might be right there. You might be right. Yeah. Excellent. Right, co-host number two is the host or joint host of Footy Says and the Three in Midfield podcast. It's Mr. Coach Koja. How you doing, mate?
I'm good, mate. Thank you for having me again.
Yeah, good to have you back on, mate. Good to have you back on. You know, I've realised, Koja, you're extremely professional when you come on the show. What's going on?
I feel like I'm the same everywhere. I don't know. I'll bring the fire soon enough. If you think the fire's not there, I'll bring it. Don't worry.
It's all right. It's all right. I trust you. I trust you.
Yeah, I'm here, man. I'm here.
Excellent. And my third co-host is former Rail Monarchs head coach and USL 2017 Coach of the Year, Mr. Mark Briggs. How are you doing, Mark? You all right?
Not too bad, mate. Thanks for having me on again, pal.
Great to have you back on. How was your Thanksgiving, by the way? We haven't spoken about this yet.
No, it wasn't bad, mate. It was quiet. A lot of turkey, a lot of stuffing, a lot of gravy, although not the same as Bisto back home.
Ah, yes.
So it wasn't bad, it was good.
Tell me something, why do they have turkey at Thanksgiving? I don't understand the significance.
Mate, I'll be honest with you, I ain't got a clue.
It's just on the table and I eat it.
I think it's just the meat, mate, that's just about it.
Just give them bacon sarnies, that's all right.
That's it, mate.
Standard. But all else being good, though?
Yeah, mate. Not too bad at all. The bad weather's coming, bit of snow. So, other than that, it's all right.
Oh, well, do you know what? I spoke to Ryan from FNX earlier on today, and he said, summer's coming, we're going to have 40 degrees. I'm like, cheers, mate. It's absolutely pissing down here.
Yeah. Thanks for that, mate. Just what I needed.
Well, hopefully let's brighten things up for the UK because we've had some absolutely dire weather lately and I get the feeling it's only going to get worse.
Right.
Right, on to the football when three streaks became two at the weekend as Sarri ball prevailed over Pep Centurions, ending City's unbeaten start to the season. N'Golo Kante and David Luiz were the unlikely heroes contributing to a, wait for it, unlikely Chelsea win. Jan, you were highly critical of Kante and his new position in Chelsea's team on Thursday. As fate would have it, Kante opened the scoring and played an instrumental part in the win. Now, was his performance a case of Kante having the game of his life or was City's midfield three off the pace?
I think City's midfield were a bit off the pace, to be honest. But, you know, like you said, Sod's Law, that I, you know, was raving about Kante playing out of position and, you know, was quite passionate about it. And then it goes against the open against City. I mean, you know.
You're the first person I thought of when that ball went in.
Oh, mate, you know, I started crying when he scored. But I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to probably shut up the next time and just say nothing. But I thought City were a bit off the pace. You know, Aguero not being there was a big factor for me. You know, the fact that his presence weren't there, his goals, etc. City looked, I don't know, it looked like their minds were elsewhere. You know, I mean, considering the fact that, you know, they've qualified for the Champions League and, you know, they can concentrate on the league now as such. But maybe a lot of games are caught up with them. I'm not too sure. But I thought Chelsea tactically were quite good on Saturday as well. They kind of surrendered the possession to City, knowing that potentially they can hit them on the break or set pieces. And overall, I probably thought they deserved to win. City weren't as bad as people, you know, made that to be. But Chelsea, I thought, deserved to win.
Absolutely. And Koja, we've ripped David Luiz apart all season, but he's actually had a massive hand in two very important goals for the club this season. Ironically, against the teams from Manchester. I've called Luiz a bipolar player due to his hot and cold performances. Is he the most frustrating player in the league?
Most frustrating player in the league is Fellaini. That's a bit of an agenda there.
I'll leave him alone.
But, you know, shameless agenda. No, he is frustrating because he can defend at times, and then at times he looks at Phillip Jones. So it's a back and forth kind of thing with him. But I was kind of happy to see him perform. I mean, more so because I was hearing stuff about can see it go unbeaten. I'm not trying to hear that this year, to be honest. So, yeah, it was a good performance from him. And, you know, that's what he's capable of. We saw his run for the header. Like, he was moving around, went from the outside, came in, went from the goalkeeper, applied a nice header. He's got quality about him. But whether he shows it on a consistent basis or not is the question. And he hardly does. But hopefully he does more of that this season, because I do like him quite a lot, and I've defended him in the past about his ability to defend. I think he can defend very well, but he just doesn't do it consistently. I guess that's why people can talk such trash about him, but he's good.
Mark, talk to me about David Luiz, mate, because he's a bit of a conundrum here, because as Kojo said, he's a fantastic footballer, he's great on the ball, his range of passing is fantastic, he's good in the air, he can be quite clumsy defensively. So what is his best position? Because I haven't seen him be absolutely outstanding at centre-back. I've seen him have good games in central midfield, but again, the clumsiness comes into play. But is he more of a holding midfielder? Should he stick to a centre-back?
It's a good question, mate. I think personally, I don't think he can play. I don't think his brain's quick enough to play as that defensive midfield player, especially how the game's gone on today, and that your number six in a midfield so pivotal to how teams play right now. I don't think he has the brain or the mind to move that quick. I think he's better with the ball when the game's in front of him. That's why he's effective from centre back when he's in possession. But like you guys have all just said, it's a bit of a conundrum because he has a great game one week, he defends, he's good on the ball, but then the next week, like, he looks like he's never been taught how to defend properly in his life. So it's one of those frustrations. I think the way Sarri plays, though, is obviously an important factor in his style of play and his system, because he likes to play at the back, and that's something that Luiz is good at. So I think you kind of have to take the... Do you know what I mean? You have to take his strengths and kind of look over his weaknesses to a certain degree just to suit your style.
Yeah, I mean, Chelsea fans have said to me, well, we've signed him twice, you know, so clearly there's something right about him. But on the flip side, I know that he's very good friends with Abramovich, for one. And number two, he's great in the dressing room. You know, we've seen him on social media in the past, the way that he dances about with other players and is a bit of a prankster. But he seems to have toned that down a little bit. And I think that could be because, well, his performances don't reflect how he should be behaving, if that makes sense. I mean, we've seen players from other clubs, like Man United being the perfect example, players all over social media whoring themselves out, but they're not putting in performances where fans can say, right, you can afford to start acting like a fool because, you know, you're putting the performances on the pitch. But perhaps David Luiz realises that he's not doing as well as he should be, hence the reason why he isn't as active on the social media side of things. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. You know, there could be a number of things. It might be Sarri. You know, Sarri might have had a word and said, look, I don't want any of that. You know, he might have grown up a little bit and figured that out for himself. Could be a number of things, but you're right in the fact that he's not as active on social media as what he was. Which you can, it's got to be a good thing for him because his performances have certainly improved this year. Anyway.
Absolutely, and we'll talk about another Chelsea defender here. That's Azpilicueta. He was another standout performer. Someone who's been somewhat of a Mr. Reliable since joining the club. Sane didn't get much change from the Spanish defender, and it just goes to show fullbacks don't have to be blessed with pace to keep out pace merchants. Not that I'm saying Sane is, but
no, you just got to know how to defend, man. This exactly. It's football. If you don't know, if you play a defensive position, you don't know how to defend, you're not in the correct role. I mean, we've got a lot of footballers in today's game that are in centre-back or full-back positions and just don't know how to defend to save their lives.
John, Smalling, Valencia, keep going.
Yeah, because we're on this whole, you know, now you have to be able to pass from here and do this and do that. Defending is now more keeping the ball. Yeah, City likes to keep the ball. But then we've seen this season and the games where they've dropped points or... have lost, like against Chelsea, when they are gotten that, the defenders are not so great at defending. I said it last season. They lost to Wigan 1-0. Kyle Walker, who's being praised as a top right back in the country, or as the top right back in the country, was really, really exposed countless times in that game. So, you know, if you know the basics of defending, the essence of defending, and how to read the game, like a spell equator, you can learn how to stop people like Sané and the other quick wingers that are in football, you know? So I was happy to see a performance like his, because he does that on a regular basis, and he's always comfortable with his left, right, and centre-back. He's never struggled.
That's right. And Mark, I'm sure you've seen Azpilicueta play on numerous occasions. What is it about him? What does he bring to Chelsea that we don't see?
I think like you just spoke about David Luiz, and you talk about Azpilicueta. David Luiz doesn't enjoy defending. I think Azpilicueta thrives from defending. You can tell that he enjoys shutting people down. He enjoys tackling people. He enjoys the ugly side of the game. For me, he's one of the best fullbacks in the Premier League, if not the world, just because of how he does defend. Yeah, he's okay on the ball. You know, he passes, he moves, he keeps it simple. But you very rarely see him get exposed. He reads the game fantastically. He puts pressure on the ball. He's physical when he needs to be physical. Yeah, for me, he's one of the top defenders in the Premier League.
Yeah, difficult to disagree with that, to be fair. Well, gents, no traditional number nines in either lineup, as both managers opted for modern-day number 10 to play central role up front. Now, neither Hazard or Sterling put on a stellar display. I mean, we'll talk about Sterling in just a moment. But were you all surprised Sarri chose not to select Giroud?
No. He uses Giroud more as an impact, I guess. I mean, I was shocked that he did start Hazard as the striker. That one did shock me. I thought you were going to start Morata, even though we know Morata's, you know, he's Morata. Yeah. I thought Hazard was going to start on the left. So that did shock me. But I always see Giroud coming on, whether it's Chelsea or Arsenal, as the guy that they can see to whip some balls in and be the more reliable option in terms of link up and heading the ball into the back of the net. So that one didn't surprise me too much.
Yeah?
It's the way the game's going at the moment, isn't it? With false number nines, false number tens. I think, you know, managers with kind of different ideas, they try different things. I mean, the fact that Sterling, I thought, was up front was a little bit of a surprise for me, especially that they got Gabriel Jesus that could have done that job. I wonder what Jesus' confidence would be like. The fact that Guerrero's not playing, he's supposed to be the second striker, but then he's gone with Sterling up front, you know. I mean, if that was Mourinho, I'm pretty sure he would have got slaughtered for it. But, you know, it's Guardiola, so he seems to get away with it. As for Hazard, well, we've seen Hazard do that job for Chelsea before. I think with Morata's movement is not great for me. He doesn't hold the ball up well as a striker, so maybe that's what Sarri's idea behind that. If you get Hazard maybe one-on-one with Laporte or Walker, he'll cause more problems than what Morata would.
Mark?
Yeah, no, I'd agree. I think it was a surprise, and I think you could, especially on the City aspect, you know, starting Sterling centrally, and then Jesus coming off the bench. I think Jesus has only scored one goal all year, though, hasn't he? I think
he scored a hat trick in the Champions League, isn't it, against Shakhtar?
Yeah, but in the Premier League, has he got one? Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, no, probably, yeah.
And I think the way Sterling's playing and the way Sané was playing, I think he's probably looked at it where he's been like, well, I've got to have them both on the field. It'd be interesting to see how he'd feel now after playing that, because they look like they certainly missed that central striker in Aguero. Do you know what I mean? Mm.
Yeah.
I don't know what you guys think, but I think Mahrez has been disappointed since he's been there.
A little bit, but I feel like he's kind of stuck in the situation where he's trying to adjust to the football that they play, because Leicester's football, the football he played under Leicester anyway.
Very counter-attacking, wasn't it?
Yeah, very, very different to the style at City. Very different. So he has the technical ability to play it, but whether he has the mentality to stick with it is the other thing. You know, he gets the ball, it's step over, step over. What happens next? Unless he creates space, he's not doing anything with the ball.
I think he's shown flashes, to be fair to him. I wouldn't say he's been terrible. I think he's shown flashes, you know, in and out. He's come in, started a few games, come off the bench a few games, and he's shown flashes of what he's capable of. But like you say, like I think Kojo just said then, when you're playing under Guardiola, there's obviously a lot of different things that come into it, intensity being one, and his style and what he expects of certain positions. And to come from playing like at Leicester, you know, 4-4-2 and a little more direct, and do you know what I mean? I think it's going to take a little bit for him to adjust. Like a lot of players have had to take under Guardiola, it takes a bit for them to adjust. If you look at John Stones, you look at various other players, they didn't necessarily go straight into performing at the highest level.
That's right. And did anyone see Guardiola's spiky response to one of the Chelsea head coaches or the coaches at full time?
Oh, no.
Yeah, with the handshake where he went to...
He basically went to shake the guy's hand and the guy said that it was a corner, which he's referring to Chelsea's second goal, and Guardiola did not like it at all. He waved his hands in the air and just walked off.
You know, when he loses, his head gets really, really hot.
Yep.
Is that, did you hear his interview on the BBC? When he was asking him the question, he looked at him like he was going to beat him out, and he goes, were you watching the same game? And I'm thinking, like, it's his job to ask you questions, in my opinion. Like, what's wrong with you? Like, he annoys me, Guardiola. He really does.
He's actually one of the worst losers ever.
Yeah, he's so patronising. He's ridiculous. Anyway. You see, you not got me started now.
Oh, I love it when you go off on a tangent. It's brilliant.
Yeah, the missus dog.
Oh, well. Poor her. She has to part with you. I only have to part with you once a week. She has to do it every day. Poor bird. She needs a medal. Right. Raheem Sterling, to his credit, bit his tongue long enough with regards to the criticisms he's received by the press and has hit back on Instagram saying newspapers help fuel racism by the way they portray black players. Now, the straw that broke the camel's back may have been the racial abuse he received at Stamford Bridge, although the England forward quite rightly leapt to the defence of teammate Tosin Adarabayo. Sorry if I've absolutely butchered your name, mate. Who was criticised by a paper for buying a £2.5 million mansion despite never started a Premier League match, as pointed out by the Rag, even though I believe he's played like over 1,600 minutes and featured in the Champions League for him, but that's another story for another time. Sterling compared this headline to of that when another young teammate, Phil Foden, who might add is white, bought a house for his mum. The headline was simply, Man City starlet Phil Foden buys a £2 million home for his mum. Now Sterling wrote, you have two young players starting out their careers, both play for the same team, both have done the right thing, which is buy a new house for their mothers, who have put in a lot of time and love into helping them get where they are. But look at how the newspapers get their message across for the young black player and then for the young white player. I think this is unacceptable, both innocent. I have not done a thing wrong, but just by the way it has been worded, this young black kid is looked at in a bad light, which helps fuel racism and aggressive behaviour. Now, credit where it's due, gents. I mean, Sterling has let his football do the talking, and I commend him for waiting this long to react to what's been written about him in the press. Now, make no mistake about it, Sterling's commitment to Man City in England can't be questioned, neither can his mental strength, because, let's face it, constant abuse from the national papers has broken much more established players. Now, I'd like to know your opinions on Sterling's comments, because it's been raging on all day. Many people have had their own opinions. I know Dave Kitson has said something which has riled a few people, but then Adrian Durham has completely hit the nail right on the head with his comments on TalkSport. What do you guys feel about the whole situation?
I think it's ridiculous, to be honest, that you can go to a football game and actually mentally, physically, wherever, you know, where you want to look at it, you know, abuse somebody like that. I don't know what can be done going forward. I mean, do you ban the club? Obviously you ban the individuals, but, you know, do they get a criminal record for it? I mean, something has to happen. You know, in this day and age now, for things like that to still be carrying on, not on a football pitch, in society, something needs to be addressed. I mean, I don't know if you guys watched Sky Sports tonight before the game. They were kind of, you know, Carragher and Gary Neville were talking about it quite, you know, in depth about, you know, what can be done, you know, going forward. And Gary Neville's making a point about, well, you know, with Beckham and, you know, Beckham and Gazza, you know, they did a lot wrong for England. But when they were up there, you know, they were held as gods by someone like Ashley Cole, who's probably one of the best kind of left backs in the generation of football, was never regarded as a no one because of the colour of his skin.
Right.
So, you know, there is a problem in this country when it comes to race. But, you know, I don't know what the authorities are going to do about it. But, of course, something needs to be done.
Yeah, I agree. It's tough. You know, you can't expect to control everyone. It's going to be hard to stop someone shouting something on a player or... you know, it's difficult. It's what comes out of their mouth. You can't control what comes out of their mouth all the time. The only issue I have this whole thing is you have people that don't really understand the situation trying to comment. You got someone like Piers Morgan going out and talking and comparing it to like what Rooney did. I mean, Rooney was sleeping with grandma prostitutes or something like that, and, well, allegedly.
No, he was.
Grannies.
Exactly, he was. And, you know, I'm just saying allegedly, I don't want to get any trouble. But yeah, he was.
Who cares? And, who cares? We would just say it as like his.
Yeah, I like that. And, you know, you got players doing all these kind of things. And then he brought the whole Phil Foden and tossing comparison. You know, Phil Foden was said it was just, he bought a £2 million pound house for his mum. And then this guy who has not played for City is on this wage, is buying a 2.5 million. Now, if he's got, he's getting the wage and he's getting the money, let him buy whatever he wants. That's not even news. The fact that him or Foden are buying houses for their mothers is not news. They can buy a house for their mother if they want to. I want to get rich enough so I can buy a house for my mother. A lot of people want to do that. So, you know, this, but it's the way it's phrased and the way it's spoken about. They feel like, a lot of people feel like you have to outright racially abuse someone for it to be racial abuse, rather than looking at, oh, why did I say it that way compared to if I said it another way for someone that was white instead of black, you know? There's a lot to deal with. It's a society thing, it's not just football. But obviously football is huge in this country, so once it happens at a game and it's seen, it gets blown into a whole new thing, and then we've got a long way to go, man, regardless. But you can't eradicate the whole thing. That's impossible. That's not going to stop.
Yeah, you're right. You can't stop somebody hailing racial abuse to someone.
No, you can't. You can't do that. But I think if you remember, like, going back probably when I was younger and playing, there was a big thing on racism, kick out racism from football, and all the top players were involved in it. And I watched over here Robbie Earl and Rebecca Lowe do the football over here on NBC Sports. And I don't know if you saw it. Robbie Earl did got really passionate and heated about what's happened, obviously, with Sterling and stuff.
He said it was cancer, didn't he?
Yeah. He said it was cancer, and he basically said he felt like he let down the next generation.
Yeah.
He let down the Raheem Sterlings. He let down all of these players that are coming through because they didn't follow through with the work that they started. And I think if you look at it now, it really did stop. I didn't realise until I watched that there wasn't as much attention paid on racism as what there was back then. It's kind of gone off the boil a little bit, and it started to fester up again. And there really is. There's no room for it in society. There's no room for it in football. The people how they acted towards Raheem Sterling at the game is a disgrace. I think at the Arsenal game, a Tottenham player threw a banana. Tottenham supporter, sorry, threw a banana onto the field, and you're just like, what's going on? What are these people? What are they doing? It can't be accepted. There has to be, like, some sort of criminal punishment, some sort of, whether it's... I know Tottenham came out and suspended him indefinitely, the supporter that threw it, but there has to be something done, because it really is, it's disgraceful.
Do you know what, Mark? I've had racism towards me on a football pitch twice. And so has my mate. And I'm going back 21 years ago, maybe, something like that.
Right.
And he cried on the pitch and he couldn't play. He was 15 years old at the time.
It's just unbelievable.
It's powerful. It can actually really destroy someone. It's not nice at all.
What I don't want people to in football, when I watch football here, to think is that, you know, it happens a lot of places. You had Balotelli getting in Italy. You've had Kevin Prince-Boateng, who actually got sent off for shouting back at fans.
Right.
For getting racially abused. It's happening in so many places. I can't remember which game it was against Spain. It wasn't a recent one, but it was a couple of years back with the monkey noises. This has been something that's been going on for a long time.
Yeah, it was a friendly on Sean Wright Phillips, wasn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, that's the one, yes. You know, for me, I always scream, educate. You have to educate these people. But again, you can try and educate some people. It's what they want to take in, is what they will learn at the end of the day. It's such a hard thing to do. What do? You punish them by banning them from coming to the stadium. Yeah, you can do that. They can still support their club from the outside looking in. It's such a hard thing
to manage.
Yeah, it's really hard to decide what kind of punishment you can do that will make them learn from the mistakes, because all it takes, if he's able to shout that because apparently he was in a moment of passion at the game and it just came out of his mouth, what can you say? What would he say to Raheem Sterling if he was genuinely angry at him? You know?
Exactly.
So it's just really hard to manage. I don't know what the solution is.
I do agree with like Raheem Sterling's treatment. Even like you talk about Ashley Cole, it's like I saw Piers Morgan's comment, and Piers Morgan put that Raheem Sterling's got a gun tattoo on his thigh or wherever it is. And like, does Piers Morgan know why he has a gun tattoo? His dad was killed through gun violence. That's why he has a gun tattoo on his thigh. And like, you've got these idiots that are just saying this stuff because of the colour of his skin. Like, that's a prime example.
Mark, do you know what? It's funny because when all of this first started, Raheem Sterling, I'm sure Kojo will remember this, when all these newspaper stories first broke about whether it be he bought a new car or, I don't know, he went shopping in Poundland and then he bought his mum a house, people on social media were saying, oh, this is just clickbait, and it's almost as if these papers are so desperate to get people clicking onto their websites that it's almost become a running joke. But it's deeper than that now. It's so deep and it's so obvious. I mean, look, it's not the fact that papers are just nitpicking. The ones that are doing it, it's the same ones that are doing it time and time again. Let's not make any bones about it. It makes me laugh when I hear people say, oh, racism is creeping back into football. It never crept out. It's always been there.
Yeah.
It's always been there. Like, it's always been there in society. Well, as you said before, Kojo, it's about education. It's on the terraces. It's on social media. It's in the mainstream newspapers. The problem is, because the way that they word it, right, it's very indirect and very casual racism that they can hold their hands up and say, well, you know, we haven't really done anything. We haven't incited it. Of course you have. You have fucking stirred the pot and you're encouraging people to become even bigger bigots than they were before in the past. We had this in the 80s, in the 70s. You know, we had it under Thatcher. Thatcher decided to kick English teams out of English football and they blamed Liverpool for it. It was Thatcher because she didn't want the hooligans to be kicking off, right? But it's all coming back again, and it's coming back even stronger. Like I said, not coming back again. It was always there. But what I'm saying is it's more
frequent now.
More frequent, absolutely. And it's absolutely disgusting. Now, this newspaper has got previous. They do it time and time again, right? Time and time again. Exactly. But no one will say anything. Why? Because if you just look at the people that buy the paper, you look at the people that it promotes, the royal family being one, you know, it just says it all, doesn't it?
Look at the World Cup stuff before it started. You know, the figure was on Sterling, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, all the coverage was on him about his tattoo and about his lifestyle and whatever. Why him? There's 22 England players. Why are you picking him?
Yeah.
This says it all, really, doesn't it?
And those little comments, like the little comments that people have,
it all plays into people's opinion. Like, I got into a pretty heated discussion after one of the World Cup games when they were slaughtering Sterling, saying this, that and the other. But he wasn't basing anything on Sterling's performance. He was basing everything on the stories that he'd read prior to the World Cup, the things that he reads in the newspaper about Raheem Sterling. And that has an effect on, if England play bad, oh, it's Raheem Sterling's fault.
I'll ask you guys a question, right? And you probably know the answer anyway. But if Raheem's, I'm going to use Sterling because since we're talking about him. If Sterling scored 6 goals in the next World Cup and England won the World Cup and he did it again in the following, do you think he will be classed as England's greatest ever player?
Hell no.
Absolutely. No chance.
Hell no.
They'll find some sort of an excuse to say, well, yeah, he did well in this tournament, but, you know, it's... And we all know that, don't we? So
yeah, and the thing is, if you look at the England players now, you put every England player's performance down for their club in the Premier League right now, who's played better than Raheem Sterling?
Exactly.
Yeah, he's arguably the best. He's arguably form at the moment. He's the best English player.
Yeah. Or even Trent at Liverpool.
Oh, yeah. Well, Alexander Trent, exactly. There's another one. But, you know, nobody mentions these players. And there's a reason why these players don't get mentioned.
Yeah, but as soon as Barkley scores a world-class goal, he should be playing for England and he should be
Like Harry Kane's done great for us, don't get me wrong, but Harry Kane scores a hat-trick, scores a couple of goals, has a good performance, you know, he's the best player in England's history.
So that was a good thing I never played for England, innit? Send a quick back to
home. We would have all been slaughtered.
Hey, I would have gone open a kebab shop in the morning or something like that.
we still get that now. Like, sometimes when I've started certain jobs and, you know, they ask me where I'm from and they're like, oh, does your dad own a kebab shop? Yeah, all Greeks own kebab shops. You idiots. Kebabs are Turkish, you fucking morons. It's called souvlaki. Thank you very much. Right, let's move on, because I'm going to get really riled up, and it's like Jan talking about Lukaku. Right, he's not being racist, by the way. He's not being racist about Lukaku, he's just saying he's shit, which is true. Right, Arsenal added another notch on the unbeaten run counter following a 1-0 home win over Huddersfield. Emery's men ground out all 3 points, but at a cost. Mustafi joined holding on the treatment table, while Babasathopoulos and Lichtsteiner picked up their fifth bookings of the season, ruling them out for the Southampton game next week. Kojo, Arsenal's match winner was Lucas Torreira, a player who's getting a bit of a reputation for scoring important goals. He only scored 4 times in the 3 years spent at Sampdoria. He's now halfway there in less than 5 months at Arsenal. I doubt their fans are expecting many goals from who I call their Gattuso.
Well, yeah, they definitely weren't expecting it, but then, let's be real, how many Arsenal fans actually knew about Torreira before he came? Yeah, there you go. But no, they obviously, the way he settled into the team and they saw how he was tackling, and also he's got a bit of quality on the ball. For him to now be adding goals so quickly, I mean, it's 2 goals so far, but it, for someone in his position, is really good. Yeah, I'm sure they're shocked by it, but you know, right now, I mean, was it Bleacher Report Football or someone else that did a picture of him, and then in the background was Patrick Vieira. So I mean, if that's what we're getting to right now,
I think you got to pump the brakes a little bit there, isn't you?
Yeah,
isn't it? He's done well since he's come in, and you've got to give Emre credit. He fits in the system well. He suits Arsenal. He puts his foot in. He connects passes and he's getting forward and scoring goals. But to be fair, Emre's giving him the confidence, putting him in a system to be able to do that. I think they both deserve credit. But to rate him up there with Patrick Vieira, I think that's a little bit too much right now.
It's only December and apparently he's Patrick Vieira. Yeah, but anyway.
Emery has made 14 half-time substitutions in 16 league games this season, as pointed out by Lineker on Match of the Day. Ian Wright and Martin Keown labelled him a genius. Is this a bit far-fetched, or is a Nobel Prize on its way to the Spaniard?
To be fair to him, he's obviously, do you know what I mean? the decisions that he's made have affected every game. He's like, so you can't knock him. To call him a genius, I'm not quite sure about that yet. But if that continues throughout the season, like, that's what you're paid as a manager to do. You have to make decisions that affect games, and he's making decisions that are affecting games and getting points for Arsenal. So I think, you know, you've got to give him credit where credit's due.
Yeah, and with Arsenal fans, I think after being under Wenger for so long, especially towards the last 6 years of his tenure at Arsenal, where he was not making those important substitutions. He wasn't going for a half-time substitution where he takes off two wingers and brings on like a centre mid and a striker like he did against Tottenham.
Right.
You know, he wasn't making all these kind of decisions, and it was always like for like. And then when he made a change, it wasn't late. It was all part of frustration for Arsenal fans because they thought, you know, you're making these changes at a time where the game is already either lost or it's too late to make a change of any effect.
Right.
So I feel like they're just glad right now that they're making some level of progress. You know, they've got something working, and it takes. And to be fair to Emery, someone that's won the Europa League 3 times in a row, right? With Sevilla, they won it 3 times in a row, didn't they? And obviously, he did well at PSG. So he's got a great reputation. So more power to him, and he's doing his thing so far.
Yeah, it's refreshing to see him so enthusiastic, so passionate on the sidelines as well, you know?
No, it's not. Bring back Wenger.
It's contagious.
Do you know what annoys me about this whole 21 unbeaten run thing? It's not the fact that they're you know, doing remarkably well. It's people that say, oh, well, who have they played? It doesn't matter who they've played. You tell me how many teams, like Arsenal, with the squad that they have, can go 21 games unbeaten. It doesn't happen that often. It really doesn't. I mean, Liverpool only now have got their best start to a season ever. And we're talking, 16 unbeaten? Arsenal are 21 unbeaten in all competitions. I don't care who they play. They could play Farmers FC every week for all I care. That's 21 games. Think about it. 21 games. And for that squad, with that back line, come on now. You've got to give them a lot of credit.
Yeah, mate, definitely. Yeah.
Well, City and Liverpool haven't had that run. You know, Liverpool have lost in Europe, Arsenal haven't. So you got to give credit where credit's due.
There you go. Well, yeah, and yeah. Arsenal's draw at Old Trafford was somewhat laborious as the victory on Sunday. We said on Thursday's show that some players looked a little tired, and while an unbeaten run is a massive confidence booster, do you think the combination of fatigue and injuries will lead to a blip in form?
Yeah, possibly. You know, we all know that, you know, the Christmas period in England is very important. And especially now that, you know, they're picking a lot of bookings, which ultimately they're getting a lot of suspensions as well. And, you know, Arsenal fans will probably agree with me. They're not really great at the back as well. So to lose Socrates as well. And I think, is it Mustafi that's suspended as well?
Is he injured?
Yeah. You know, and they've had a decent partnership as well. So, you know, and with Holding being out for the rest of the season, they've got problems there at the back. I mean, I know Koscielny is coming back, but he's been out practically, 9 months now? Or 6 or 9 months? So he's going to find it difficult to slow back in. So, and Arsenal squad have been, I mean, Ozil hasn't been there for about, what's happened to him? He's got a bad back apparently, hasn't he?
Apparently, mate.
You know,
apparently.
But, is he in the frame to come back to give them some help? Because they can do with all the players at the moment. Because, like I said, the Christmas period, not only for Arsenal, but all the clubs in the Premiership, that's where the squad is tested. And, you know, that unbeaten run could go soon if you know, all the players are not up to full speed.
Well, look, you're going to do your backing if you're carrying 300 grand in pennies, aren't you?
Yeah. You know,
right?
You know, just quick one for tonight. For any Evertonians listening, Lucas Digne scored a 96-minute free kick to get them a point.
It was a cracker as well.
I was watching it then while we were doing this talk.
Yeah, and it was a cracker. So.
Great goal, mate.
I think Ben Foster's reaction said it all. Really.
That was a fantastic free kick.
That's the kind of hissy fit you see from kids in supermarkets or in Toys R Us that don't get what they want. You know, they're just flapping on the ground like a fish out of water.
Yeah. He just saved the penalty as well. To be fair to him, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, that's right. Right, talk about Everton. We'll talk about their rivals, cross-town rivals or cross-the-road rivals, Liverpool, where Mo Salah scored a hat-trick at Bournemouth in Liverpool's 4-0 win as Klopp's men warmed up for their make-or-break Champions League encounter with Napoli. Liverpool's goal glut was hardly a surprise, but the same can't be said about Manchester United, who themselves put four past the Balsawood Fulham. Claudio Ranieri probably didn't expect to come away with much from Old Trafford and may have been a little relieved Southampton's new manager bounce is yet to begin as Saints lost 1-0 at Cardiff. Kojo, this may sound like I've got my Man United hat on, but Liverpool have had quite a bit of luck in front of goal lately. Origi's winner in the derby being Exhibit A. Exhibit B is Salah's opening goal on Saturday, which was offside. And we've seen title-winning sides score fortuitous goals in the past. Are we seeing signs that Lady Luck has You'll Never Walk Alone on a playlist and it's on repeat?
I damn hope not. I ain't trying to see Liverpool win the league this year. I don't want to see City win it either, so it's kind of, oh, damn. Yeah, you know, they're getting their bit of luck at the moment, which anyone would tell you that the teams that have won the titles in the past, they've had their little bit of luck during the season where something's happened and you're like, well, this shouldn't have happened, but they've got it and they've got their points. So, yeah, they are getting their luck right now. But they're also performing well and getting the right results where they need to. That's the key thing. Klopp is now retaining his squad very well. So he hasn't got much to worry about in terms of tiredness, because he's added depth to the team now, so he can afford to rest players minus Van Dijk, really, because Van Dijk's the linchpin of that defence. So yeah, you know, they are getting their luck, but they're also performing very well and they're first on merit. That being said, I'm kind of hoping that they magically finish 10th, but you know, that can't happen now, so yeah, there you go. But no, they're doing well, man.
Well, they had luck against Fulham as well at home, didn't they, when was it Mitrovic? I put him ahead,
yeah,
with the goal.
Yeah.
And got
yeah.
disallowed, and then with the free kick, Liverpool went the other end and scored. It's
yeah.
it's things like that that, you know, listen, I'm not knocking Liverpool, of course, you know, they are a great side, but it's like what Stel said, is games like these, decisions like these, that ultimately at the end of the year can win you the title. So, but then again, you'd rather have the luck than not, innit? So, well, you make your own luck in football.
I guess if we had VAR, that might not be the case, isn't it, Jan?
No comment, man. You lot are getting your wish next year, so I don't know why you lot keep rubbing it in.
Just your reaction to it is just brilliant. VAR is like a red rag to a bull. That's it. Okay, Mark, your mate Jose Mourinho praised his players for their intensity, aggression and strength, a trait we're very used to seeing in the first couple of months when he was at Chelsea. It must have been a good performance when one of the best finishers in the world, Mitrovic, was kept at bay.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think he was obviously happy for, like you, I think one of you said earlier, for United to go and score four goals this season, there must have been something go right, because it's been a struggle this year. So no, I think it was a great performance for them, obviously, to get four at home and get a bit of confidence, and let's see now if they can push on up the league, like, and be where they're where we're used to seeing them, let's say.
A struggle isn't the right word, Mark. I'd like to the best way I can describe it is an insomniac with constipation.
Well, I know there's a few United fans on here, so I was trying to be, you know. I didn't want to antagonise you boys.
Mark, we're trash. It's okay.
Yeah,
we're trash.
Yeah. Just say how it is. We say worse, trust me.
We've done this dance before this season, Mark. Don't worry about it. We know the steps. We can go and Strictly Come Dancing now. It's all good. Right. Jan Ranieri said it was 11 lambs against 11 wolves, which is ironic because United have been bitched out on numerous occasions this season and beyond. When you see Seri being outfought by Ander Herrera, you know something's not right at Fulham. Would you agree?
Yeah, you're going down if that's the case. You know, they bought that guy to kind of, you know, hold the back four and, sorry, to sit in front of the back four and protect and kind of be the main man in midfield. And when Ander Herrera's running rings around you, then, you know, Ranieri's got a massive problem. I don't think Fulham were that bad. I know the scoreline, you know, it's 4-1 and it looks bad. I didn't think Fulham were, you know, were that bad, but he's got a lot of work to do. And it's been, the thing is with Fulham, right? Fulham try and play decent style of football, etc. But when you're conceding near enough 3, 4, 2 goals a game, you're going to go down. It doesn't matter what kind of pretty football you play. You're not going to outscore the opponent because you don't have the quality to do it. So this January for Fulham is massive. If Ranieri can get maybe a couple of defenders in, or you know, or a decent midfielder maybe to kind of protect the back four and become a little bit more solid, then he might have a chance. But if they don't invest, he's in massive trouble. I mean, I did say that when they appointed him, they'll be all right, but I haven't seen much of a change. So maybe I should retract again what I said. You know, I'm having a nightmare with these predictions this season. I think I'm just going to say nothing. I'm telling you.
Well, it's a good job I've got my Vape Mates Classic here with me, because I'm just puffing away while you just rant on about things that are incorrect. So there you go. Lovely.
You get pleasure by pointing them out, don't you?
Yes, I do, my friend.
Yeah,
yes, I do.
Yeah, I know. I figured that out. Yeah,
sorry. Kojo, we thought the defending in the United-Arsenal game was bad. I think Yannick Vestergaard's attempt, if you can call it that, to clear his lines with Callum Patterson bearing down on him takes turgid defending to another level. Hassan Hüttl needs to be backed in the January window, doesn't he?
I don't have to describe that defending.
Crap, turgid, clueless, shit.
That's kind of an understatement. All those words are not good enough. He's a professional footballer who does not know how to kick a football correctly. And that basically means you're not really good at your job. I don't care what happens between now up to May. That's the worst mistake this season. I don't care. That was disgusting. And Patterson has a very, very strong lack of pace. So even when he got the ball, you could see that he was even struggling to even finish the ball, let alone even get there. So, you know, when you give him that kind of opportunity, you deserve to be punished. The manager needs to be backed desperately. And when I say desperately, it means give him 80 million, go and buy a whole new back four. Make Ryan Bertrand the winger, because he tends to think he's a winger. And try and give Alex McCarthy or whoever's in goal a break, because... Man, Southampton have been... you know how people say Tottenham have been the most consistent team in the Premier League for the last 3 years, even though they haven't won anything? Southampton have been the most consistent rubbish team in the Premier League without getting relegated. they're like 2018 Wigan, you know?
Yeah.
So
They're like an Aston Villa in the making.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't just say that because Mark is here and he's a Wolves fan. Behave yourself.
I like that, mate. I like that.
Cheers, Mark. You're my mate anyway. Don't worry. You back me, so that's all right. Yeah, carry on.
But yeah, no, they are poor, man. They are very, very poor. They got to do better. We've gone past the whole, they've had players taken from them by Liverpool kind of thing. This happened. It hasn't happened for a long time. Well, actually, it happened recently, Van Dijk. But apart from Van Dijk, there was a nice break and their team was just poor regardless and nothing's changed. So, you know, they received, what, 75 million for Van Dijk?
Yeah,
so, you know, use that wisely.
And do nothing with it. Mm.
Yeah. Guys, correct me if I'm wrong, ain't Patterson at Cardiff a defender by trade?
That's right.
Yeah.
So, are you telling me that Patterson, who's a defender by trade, has actually got more goals than Shane Long?
Everyone got more goals than Shane Long, man.
Yeah, Shane Long should retire. I'm telling you,
he's bad. He's very bad.
Do you know what? When I saw that goal, the first thing I thought was, Vestergaard, you only had one job. And I was thinking about it. What other jobs could Vestergaard do wrong? Like maybe holding a door open. Can he get that wrong? Honestly, like opening a drawer. Can he get that wrong? Honestly,
yeah, but you don't know still if he had Cardiff to win 1-0 in his bet.
Oof, you don't know.
You don't know that, do you?
Don't know it's good shout there, Jan. Good shout. Yeah. Good shout there. Right, moving swiftly on. In other news, is there anywhere else to begin, really? After all the controversy surrounding the Copa Libertadores final, we finally have a winner, and that's River Plate, who came from behind to beat Boca Juniors 3-1 on the night, 5-3 on aggregate. The second leg was hosted at Real Madrid's Bernabeu, a controversial and politically insensitive decision, given the Libertadores was named in tribute to those who fought for the independence of South America in the 19th century against Spain. Jan, this two-legged affair had all the drama and entertainment that encapsulates football's biggest rivalries, didn't it?
Oh, it was brilliant, mate. It's what I love the game of football. You know, two clubs, two teams who absolutely despise each other with a passion. To play in a final as heated as it was, the controversy coming into it. There was a severe lack of quality on the pitch. I didn't think, you know, both teams had a lot of quality, but they both played with a lot of intensity, a lot of passion. I do think River Plate overall did deserve to win the final. For me, and Mark, who's a manager, Mark might agree, might disagree with me. Shaletto's decision to take, I can't even say his name probably, Benedetto?
Yeah,
For a Billa, I thought that was such a horrendous decision. I don't know what you guys think, but for me, the game turned as soon as he came off. It looked like to me that River Plate took the initiative after that, went for Boca. Boca couldn't get out of their half, to be honest. It looked like, you know, they were just happy to sit in and defend and River Plate with Martinez, and then when Quintero came on, he changed the game. He started to find little pockets and play balls in behind the lines where Boca couldn't handle that. So, you know, overall, River Plate, like I said, deserves to win.
Absolutely. And Kojo, barbaric behaviour from the River Plate fans and pure incompetence by the CONMEBOL top bods aside, this was an incredible advert for South American football, no?
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know, because... You know, you have it in one of the biggest stadiums for one of the biggest clubs in the world. So, you know, you have a lot more eyes on it. And the fans behaved very well. So that added a little more peaceful, a bit of a peaceful side to it, considering what happened beforehand. So the game couldn't be played before. But yeah, no, I think it was a very good game to watch. And it was very enjoyable. You see the passion. Very, very odd decisions by the referee. I don't know. There was one where he gave an indirect free kick in the box for someone blocking a challenge.
I saw that.
Confusing as hell. So that's not a great effort for him. But for the players, they enjoyed themselves and they had a good time on the pitch. Well, River did anyway. So it was good. And yes, he had a lot of professional footballers. You know, Dybala, Messi, Chiellini, to name a few, that came to watch the game. Torreira went there as well. So, you know, it was you can tell it was such an important game for a lot of people. And I hope we get to see a lot more of it in the future. I mean, this is the first I was able to watch it without streaming. I had it on Free Sports, on Freeview. So it was good to watch. And yeah, hopefully we can get a lot more like that in the future, but not as much violence. That kind of ruins it.
Absolutely.
It did lose something, though, playing in Spain.
Oh, yeah, the natural aura of the game wasn't there.
Yeah, it did lose a bit of magic on it, yeah.
For sure, yeah. I'd say that was probably the only negative piece about it. Do you know what I mean? It takes away that passion, that enthusiasm in your own country. You know, it just takes a bit, like you say, a little bit of that aura away from the game.
Yeah, it sounded like a Super Cup playing at a different venue, something like that.
Well, apart from the half and half scarves, it weren't a bad night for the fans, was it?
No, it wasn't. No, they both behaved themselves, which was important. But then I don't think the Spanish authorities would have taken anything different, to be honest. So,
Right there, mate. Well, gents, I get the feeling that the long-term winner of all this is Spain. I mean, here you have a nation whose major league was inches away from having matches played in America. And now the Spanish are making a bid for the 2030 World Cup. While the tournament is 12 years away, I'm sure the Spanish bid will include the Libertadores final in its portfolio with a tagline, "We cleaned up their mess," or something much more professional than that. Could the second leg of the Libertadores final hinder any planned joint bid by Argentina and Uruguay?
I hope not. Mm. I mean, this if they confuse the rivalry between two clubs as a thing to say, well, what happens if other nations come there. I mean, we've had in Brazil, we had Argentina fans go to Brazil, and there was this story about, you know, the rivalry and what the something happened. Nothing happened. It's, if you have got fans of nations going to watch their team play football, as long as you control everything and police everything and you try and stop any sort of little altercations, everything will be fine. These are two clubs that genuinely hate each other. And when they hate each other like that, unfortunately, you get very, very carried away with it and make a much bigger scene than it needs to be. But I don't think there should be any sort of decision made based on this game for any future decision, you know?
Mark, what's your take on all this? Because as I said before, you know, the Spanish will be very braggadocious about securing this second leg. Do you think it will ruin any chances of a South American team getting the 2030 World Cup?
I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't like to think so. And it shouldn't. It certainly shouldn't. Like we just said, like it's two club teams, two passionate club teams that shouldn't really affect the decision of whether the World Cup goes to one of those countries. I think, you know, if you look back at past World Cups, the South American World Cups have always been successful. So I hope it wouldn't dictate the people who makes a decision. I think South America World Cups in South America have been some of the most exciting World Cups.
True. I mean, the only thing is, I'm not sure as a percentage how many of the new Brazilian stadiums that were used for 2014 are still being used. I know that in Greece they have that issue with, you know, the Olympics, where some stadiums aren't being used. In Argentina and Uruguay, that's they're aiming to host the tournament, being, you know, the centenary since the first World Cup final, which was obviously Argentina against Uruguay. Yeah, right. Let's be 100% honest, mate. Money talks at the end of the day, and with the Spanish stadiums being up to scratch or getting there, I don't know how much money the Argentinian and Uruguayan authorities are going to pump into building these stadiums. And will they be built on time? Are they going to be, meeting health and safety quotas? There are a lot of questions around this bid, aren't there?
Yeah, there is. But like you said, money talks as well. I think Spain are probably due a World Cup, isn't it? When was the last time they had one? 82? Mm-hmm. So they're, you know, and one of the kind of power nations as such as well. I think they drew a World Cup, so I can see it happening. I mean, if you look at the Spanish stadiums as well, they're all kind of in place to host the World Cup, aren't they? You know, you've got Bilbao, you've got Real Madrid, you've got Atletico Madrid, who've just built their own. Barcelona, of course, Villarreal, Valencia, so Celta Vigo, you know.
Espanyol got a new stadium. I think Real Madrid's one has been revamped.
So. Yeah. So, you know, there are a lot of stadiums kind of ready-made to be ready for a World Cup. So, yeah, I see your point. I can see Spain definitely hosting one, definitely, yeah. You're right.
Absolutely. Right, while Juan Quintero's heroics in the Libertadores final puts him back on the radar of Europe's finest, Jadon Sancho continues to break records in the Bundesliga as he became the club's first teenager to reach 6 goals in a season. The England winger scored a 74th minute winner in Dortmund's 2-1 win at rival Schalke, maintaining their 9-point lead at the top. Now, Mark, the Daily Fail, aka the Daily Mail, chose to go with the headline, Sancho admits he doesn't trust German barbers, so he flies out his stylist over from the UK instead of anything related to his winner. There's no denying he has talent, and at 18, he's by no means a finished article. What methods do you think Dortmund will use to help with his development? I can't see him playing every game, can you?
No, not at all. I don't think he'll play every game, week in, week out. But saying that, we're not with him on a daily basis. We don't know how his body's reacting to the intensity, to the games. We don't know, like, whether he's mentally still with it and all that stuff. There's a lot of things that go play into it. So right now you'd think that they'd take him out and give him a rest and put him back in and kind of nurture his talent and nurture his development. But the way he's performing, the performances he's put in, the goals he's scoring, like he's putting performances in of a veteran player, you know, that's been around and done it. So you never know. It wouldn't surprise me if he does play a lot more than anticipated. Mm. But the Germans are also very on point with their development.
Absolutely.
So I'm sure they'll make the right decision for him.
Mm.
Coach, well, guys, going back to earlier on when we were talking about racism, no one's talking about Sancho, are they?
Exactly.
You know? Well, I just said the same newspaper that, you know, throwing crud at Sterling, they didn't go with a headline about him scoring the winner. They spoke about his bar.
If that was like a Michael Owen when he was 17, it would have been, here's our boy Wanda, he's going to win us the World Cup, etc., blah, blah, blah. And you've got a guy, for me, who deserves a lot of respect, the fact that he's taken a gamble for leaving England to go to Germany as a kid to try and make a career out of himself. He's gone to Dortmund, one of the powerhouses in Germany, who's done exceptionally well for a kid, but it's a good thing we know about him because no one else talks about him.
Yeah. And they put the headline about his barber. Like,
yeah.
Come on. That's
well, you know what? They'll never right actually understand the relationship between the barber and the guy that gets the trim. That it's just, it's special. So if they want to talk, that's going to make sense. You know what?
It's stereotyping, isn't it?
It's very big.
Instead of talking about his talent on the pitch, all they're interested about that he flies a barber, whatever, from another country because he's got money to cut his hair.
That's ridiculous.
That's the bottom line.
It's ridiculous, but you know what? Good for him as well. Let him do that. There's bullshit. He's doing that and he's succeeding on the pitch. So he can do what he wants, you know? Those kind of headlines are all BS.
Well, look, we've seen bigger name players go out to Germany and fail. I remember Adnan Januzaj, who was supposed to be better than Raheem Sterling at one point, went to Dortmund. Then what did he do? Nothing. He just warmed the bench. Wasn't it Ciro Immobile that went to Dortmund? Yeah, he didn't have a great time there. And he's banging in goals in Serie A. So this lad is 18 years old. He's 18 years old. And he scored 6 goals already this season. I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't know much about Jadon Sancho before he joined Dortmund. I'm shocked he's hit the ground running. But at the same time, as Mark said before, you know, the Germans know how to nurture talent. And Kojo, how far can this kid go, man? Honestly, if he's coached correctly... let's be honest, he's going to end up back in the Premier League one way or the other. But I just hope that, you know, he's at a level like a Gareth Bale was at Spurs when he joined Real Madrid. I hope he hits that level before coming to the Premier League, because I get the feeling that if he comes in before he hits that stage, he might struggle a bit.
Yeah, he's developed wonderfully. I'm glad that he's one of the players that decided, you know, when you're at a club like City, you know, you have the riches being thrown at you. They're saying you've got a lot of potential. We'll try and bring you through. I mean, I'm sitting there wondering, does Phil Foden regret maybe not taking that sort of chance? Because, yeah, he's getting first-team football, but when you come off the bench for the last 7 minutes of a 2-0 loss, you're not learning anything. You're not gaining anything. Mm. Sancho's gone to another club in another country. He's decided to go and adapt to the culture over there, adapt to the football over there, and he's shining. He's playing wonderfully well, to the point where you hear about him every week. Same as Reece Nelson. Reece Nelson's now doing the same thing at Hoffenheim.
Hoffenheim, yeah.
He's playing very well. You know, he's doing his thing out there. And it's good, you know. There's a thing about the English press about when an English player goes abroad and becomes a success, or becomes a success abroad even without playing in England, like Owen Hargreaves before he came to Man United.
Eric Dier.
Like, for example, like, how long did it take them before they started saying, oh, wait, Hargreaves is actually a decent player? You know, they used to criticise him playing for England. How did he get to the England squad? You weren't watching him at Bayern Munich. He was playing games for Bayern Munich and playing very well. There's a reason why they kept him at the club. There's a reason why they liked him. Sancho's gone to Borussia Dortmund, and we're not hearing about Christian Pulisic. It was a damn joke that he came second in that new Ballon d'Or for the under-21s thing that they pretty much made for Mbappe. You know, it's just... they have this snobbery. It's like, oh, you know, if you don't do it here, what can you do? And he's gone out there and he's performing brilliantly. And it wouldn't surprise me if Dortmund get back into the Champions League and face an English team and he embarrasses defenders, scores a goal, but then what are they going to say about him?
It's an arrogance. It's an arrogance from the British almost. Like, and, you know, I'm obviously British, but it's an arrogance for us that we don't respect other leagues as much as we think the Premier League's the best league in the world and blah, 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 which, don't get me wrong, it possibly is. But we're arrogant in the respect that we don't give Jadon Sancho enough credit because he's playing in the Bundesliga. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas if he was in the Premier League, the people would be raving about him. But he's playing in the Bundesliga, which to me arguably speaks a lot more about the kid as a player, as a person, to have the balls to turn down a contract at Man City, to then go and play in Germany, a country you've never been before, a country you don't know much about, you have to learn the language. There's a lot. I've got a lot more respect for him to be putting in those performances when you look at all the obstacles he's had to overcome.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's like Graham Potter as well, isn't it? When he was at Sweden.
Yeah.
You know, he done wonders there in Sweden. I think he won the league with Norrköping, if I'm not mistaken. And Norrköping are like the equivalent to like a Reading or something like that.
Right. And,
you know, people don't get the praise because it's not in this country. Because they do it in another country, it's like it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Which is wrong. But anyway, that's for a debate for another day, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, look, let's cross over back to America, where Atlanta United beat Portland Timbers 2-0 to win the MLS Cup for the first time in their four-year history. Goals from MVP Joseph Martinez, his 35th of the season, and Franco Escobar gave Tata Martino the perfect leaving gift as he becomes Mexico's new head coach. Now, gents, Atlanta have totally dominated MLS this season, and we said back in September that it would be difficult for any team to stop them. What do you make of their campaign? It seemed too easy for them, in my opinion.
Yeah, but I was glad they were. I was glad they won it, to be honest. They're the best team by far. They play the best football. They have the best players. They have the best coach. And to be honest, they have the best fan base. So it was fitting for them to go and actually win it.
What makes it so special?
77,000 the other day, wasn't it?
Yeah, 74,000, I think.
74, yeah.
Mark, what makes their fan base so special, though?
It's like Europe. They're invested. They're into it. They don't stop chanting. It's just a completely different atmosphere to what's been in America before. You know, I think they get more. They get more attention than what the NFL team does there, which is unheard of anywhere else in the country.
Wow, okay.
They get more attention, so much so that the NFL team has been advertising at the Atlanta games to go to the games.
Deal.
So what they've done at that club, it's amazing for American soccer in general, to be honest.
Will things change now that Martino's gone, though? And I know Almiron could be on his way to Newcastle, as a good friend of ours, Roberto Rojas, broke the other day.
It's going to be difficult for whoever goes in there now, that's for sure. Obviously, in Tata Martino, he's used to handling those situations, being at Barcelona, being a big club like that, and various other international positions he's been at. He's used to handling that. And I think he enhanced that, and he enhanced the reputation of the club with the style of football he plays and his knowledge and the players that he brought in, young international players who are hungry for success. Obviously, that helps everything. But the fan base that they have now, the success that they've had, I'm sure it will continue.
Mark, that's a bit of you, isn't it, Atlanta?
I wouldn't mind that at all, mate.
He's thrown his hat in the ring.
That's it. Might be a few years off that, but yeah.
Never know. Might get on the blower.
That's it, mate. You never know.
If you get the job, just remember me, though, yeah?
That's it, mate. Just got to give Carlos Buck an egg rush, yeah? Tell him I'm back.
Fair enough. Well, we've slandered Fulham a bit, so I don't think he's going to like it too much.
No.
He was at Fulham, wasn't he? Or was it?
He
was at Fulham, yeah.
He was, yeah. There you go.
He was there with McBride.
Brian McBride, yeah. Yeah, and,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I want to say Claudio Reyna, was he there as well? Can't remember. Claudio Reyna was at City.
No, Reyna was at City.
Yeah, he was at Man City. I didn't think.
And then he went to Sunderland, didn't he?
Ah, yes. The dreaded Sunderland. Right, over in Serie A, Juve beat Inter to go 11 points clear at the top. A lead that's since been cut to 8 points after Napoli won at the weekend. Gents, Juve head coach Allegri said his side hasn't killed the league, although with the Nazzurri being so far ahead at this stage of the season, an 8th title in a row is on the horizon. It doesn't look good for Italy's top league, though, does it?
Um, It's I mean, it's okay. I mean, what's happening now is obviously you've got a powerful team up top, and then you've got 5-6 teams that are vying for the rest of the Champions League and Europa League spots. So it's competitive in that sense, but you would prefer a more competitive race for the title. But when they signed Ronaldo, you knew that everybody else was in trouble, because that adds to Emre Can and Cancelo coming in and Perrin to back up Szczesny. And it was just like, yeah, you can see. And Matuidi. I even forgot about him. There you go. So, yeah, you know, when they add so much depth to their team, and considering getting most of them on a free, I've got three players on a free transfer, and Ronaldo for, I think, 100 million. You spent well in the transfer window. You've not done anything bad at all, to the point where they could just offload Higuain to AC Milan, no problem. So, you know, it's bad in the sense that you've got a team that's now looking to dominate a lot more. You have Ronaldo come out today saying that he'd like Messi to take the challenge of coming to Italy, which basically means come to Juventus and play with me. Let's destroy everybody else together now. But yeah, for the other teams, because they're so far behind, they just have to try and build. You know, Milan, Inter, Roma, Napoli, about getting to Europe and competing and trying to get to a state where you can actually go toe-to-toe with Juventus, because right now they're so far ahead of everybody.
Serie A is the better version of the Scottish Premiership.
Oof. Wow.
Well done.
What's the difference?
Wow.
What's the difference? You know who's going to win the league before it's even started. There's no difference. Inter Milan are your Kilmarnock. Roma are like your Aberdeen.
Wow.
You know?
That's a bit hard, Jack.
They have a little challenge. And then they end up 18 points behind the leaders at the end of the season.
Oh, my days. I don't know what to say about that. Christ.
What the... You know, the proof's in the pudding. Was it 9 years in a row now? You're going to win it? Is it 9? 8?
I think 8.
When was the last time... Who was the last team to win the league apart from Celtic? Who was it? Was it Rangers? when they were good?
Oh, yeah, it was.
But there you go. There you go. I rest my case. Anyway, let's move on.
Okay. Wow, Cengiz Undo's Gary Mackay Stephen in disguise.
Ciro Mobile is Chris Boyd.
Oh, Yaz just killed this whole debate. You're going to get pounded on Twitter, I'll tell you this for now.
That's the whole point.
Right, let's move swiftly on to the Mbappe Stadium, where a certain Kevin Miralles scored a 96th-minute equaliser for Fiorentina in a 3-3 draw at Sassuolo. Now, Kojo, Pioli has had a rough time as of late. Fiorentina are without winning 7, and their 3 goals at the weekend makes it 9 goals in 9 games. Pressure is mounting on the former Inter boss and his young strikers, Giovanni Simeone and Federico Chiesa. It's about time Miralles stepped up, though. He's literally been hiding since joining on loan, hasn't he?
You know, the guy's 31 years old and he still doesn't know what to do on a full pitch. I'm tired of him, to be honest. I've been tired of him for a long time. He's like Moussa Sissoko, except Moussa Sissoko comes out with confidence and says, I deserve to be playing at this level. He thinks of a player. He looks at even this thing. He looks like it. You know, you look at him. He comes out with the arrogance. I'm this good. I can do this. I can do that. As soon as some teams wanted him from Everton, could show a decent bit of form, he started thinking he was too good for Everton. To this day, you're going off on loan from Everton, so that shows the kind of player that you've become. He's not impressive to me. He's really not impressive. You're right, this season, I mean, he's played 90-minute games. One game for 53 minutes. Other than that, he's been injured or he's been a bit part player. And there's reasons why for that. You know, if you're not doing that Everton, where was he on loan before? Was it
Olympiacos?
Yes, Olympiacos. Didn't do it there either. And you're at Fiorentina and the youngsters are out doing you. There's a reason why you're not playing a lot of games. I'm just tired of him, man. I've had enough of him for a long time. He's 31 years old. He probably still thinks he has potential. he's got potential to be playing for. Maybe he can join Chris Broyd or something. I don't know. He's not special. He's never been special. I've had enough of him, to be honest. I don't know what he's doing there.
There you go. Kevin Morales isn't special. You've heard it here. Right, guys. It's now time for Eurotrash.
And now it's time for Eurotrash.
Now, for those of you who don't know, this is where the panel name their best of the worst stories from Europe. Now, this week's Eurotrash is quite Serie A heavy, and one that Jan probably won't like. Contender number one comes at the Stadio Olimpico as VAR stole the show in Sampdoria's 2-2 draw against Lazio. With the game level at one apiece, the hosts were awarded a 95th minute penalty with the help of VAR after a handball was spotted. Ciro Immobile scored what Lazio thought was the winner. However, Riccardo Sampadora's 99th minute equaliser became etched in Serie A folklore as it is the latest goal in the competition's history. Contender number two is again in Serie A as nine-man Cagliari gained a point against Roma after being 2-0 down. With the game 2-1 to Roma, Cagliari had two men sent off in the 94th minute. Incredibly, they forced an equaliser in the 95th minute. And contender number three is Harry Redknapp, who became king of the jungle in I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. Redknapp Senior adds this personal achievement to his list of honours, which include the FA Cup with Portsmouth in 2008, Premier League Manager of the Season 2010, Playoff final winner with QPR in 2014, and Intertoto Cup winner as West Ham manager in 1999. Now, Harry's son Jamie, who won the League Cup, Community Shield and European Super Cup with Liverpool, said he's proud of his dad, and his dad has shown the world how down-to-earth he is, although the former Spurs midfielder admitted he found out his dad was going in the jungle after reading it in the paper. I'm sure Jamie will win a TV award someday, but I'm not sure which channel will screen I'm a Shit Pundit, Help Me Out Here. Right, gentlemen, of the three stories, which is the best of the worst? Jan, you go first. I got a feeling I know which one you're going to go with.
Yeah, I'm going with the first one.
Go on.
Purely on the basis. Remember the argument? Well, I have arguments all the time, but remember with Rod about VAR when I said that with the VAR, the games are going to be going in the 100th minute and the 105th minute. Well, there you go. 99th minute equaliser. Trash. That's mine. 99 minute goal. No, that's mine.
give him a rod. Give him a rod and some bait. He's bit. All right, okay. Kojo.
I'm going to go with Harry Redknapp for one reason. You're reading that his accolades, and then he decided with confidence to mention the Intertoto Cup. I thought we left that in the past with people like Jody Marsh.
I'll leave Jody alone, bless her.
why would he... The Intertoto Cup was nonsense. So, yeah, I'm going for that because he really shouldn't have mentioned that. I don't know what kind of pride he takes from that competition. Jesus.
Mark,
I'm going to agree with you there, mate. I'm going to go with Harry for In the Jungle. I haven't seen any of the headlines, but the fact that he even went in the jungle. You know, I'm just going to leave it with that.
There you go. Mark has spoken. So you have it, ladies and gents. Harry Redknapp wins another award. You're a trash of the week. Excellent. Gentlemen, before we wrap things up, we have time for our quiz. Now, Mark hasn't played before. Kojo, did you play before? Was it Tuesday? Were you here? I can't remember.
No, I wasn't.
Yeah, with Socrate, yeah.
Yes. Here. Okay, so those of you still listening, it's a game that we've brought back. It's called Who Are You? Or Guess Who? We still haven't decided the name of it after 6 years of doing it. Basically, what I've done, I've thought of a current Premier League player. Note the word current. And you guys need to guess who he is. Now, I will give you some clues, and they will come in the form of his former teammates. So players who he's played alongside in the past. Okay?
Yep.
Okay. So, I'm going to give you three clues first, and then we'll do it round by round. You guys have to guess. Okay? So, the first clue is Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Okay.
Okay. Second clue is Mo Salah. Clue number three is Antonio Rudiger.
Antonio
So this guy's paired with Wolf Freedom?
Yep.
Okay. Rudiger has played for. Okay. Salah played for. And Zlatan. Zlatan's played for a lot of places.
Ah. Who wants to guess first? You got three rounds, remember? So three guesses. Jan?
Give me a minute. Give me a minute. I'm trying to digest the break.
This is why I leave this quiz to the last minute, literally, because, you know, we could go on for hours on this one.
Give me a minute. Who did he used to play for? Was he playing back then?
Mark, do you want to guess?
Oh, God. I ain't got a clue, mate, if I'm honest.
Do you want to pass?
I ain't got a Scooby. Yeah, I'll pass, mate.
Okay, Mark's passed. Kojo?
So Mo Salah, Rudiger, and Ibrahimovic. Damn, he's in clicking. Who's come from Italy to play in the Premier League?
What's the next clue?
We need to guess first.
I can't. No, next one.
Okay, he's passing. Jan?
No, I'm passing.
Oh, I like this one. Okay, the second set of clues are Fernando Torres, Philip Senderos, and Timo Werner.
Oh, God.
Felix Senderos.
Yep.
Felix Senderos.
So just to recap, this footballer who's currently playing in the Premier League has played alongside Timo Werner, Antonio Rudiger, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Mo Salah, Felix Senderos, and Fernando Torres, who isn't still living in a hotel, might I add. Jan, come on.
Is it Kovacic?
Kovacic, is that your guess?
Yeah.
Okay. I have no clue, so I'll go with Kovacic as well.
Okay, Mark?
Yeah, we're all going Kovacic, mate.
Well, guys, it's not Kovacic.
So. Okay.
Another.
I was only testing to see what the other guys would say.
Right, okay. The next round of clues is Bojan. Remember him?
Yeah.
Bojan? There's Paco Alcázar, who's at Dortmund at the moment.
Yeah, play for Barcelona.
Yeah, and Demba Ba.
Wait, Demba Ba?
Yeah.
Demba Ba.
Oh my God. Oh, man. That threw me off.
That's exactly what every West Ham fan said when they signed him.
He's played for West Ham, he's played for Newcastle, played for Chelsea. Oh, damn it.
Where would he have played?
This is a good one. This is better than last week.
It is, isn't it?
You know, I can't lie to myself. I'm lost here.
I'm out of it.
Yeah, I'm out, man.
You've done it.
Wow. Two.
Do you know what? I'm pretty sure it's a Roma or a Chelsea player.
Okay, go on.
I'm just trying to think of who.
Okay, well, I've got one.
Oh! Is it Palmieri?
Palmieri?
Yeah, the left back at Roma.
Is that your guess?
Yeah.
Wait, do you see he's a current player in the Premier League?
Yep.
All right.
That's your guess, Jan?
Yeah, that is my guess, yeah. Palmieri.
Wait. Oh,
you passed. You passed.
Wait, right. I can't come back?
No, you can't come back.
Oh, man. Okay.
Jan?
Yeah.
You're wrong.
can I
smoke
it before you give
your answer? No, I've got one more round. I've got two more players. I knew this was going to be difficult, so I'm going to throw these two in at you. The first one is Ryan Bertrand. Huh?
Who was the? Sorry, I didn't hear.
Well, you interrupted me. That's why I didn't hear. The first one is Ryan Bertrand, and the second one is Danny Alves.
Ooh, okay.
So, just to let you guys know, this player played alongside Rudiger, Bertrand, Werner, Alcázar, Demba Ba, Philip Senderos, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Fernando Torres, Mo Salah, Bojan, and Danny Alves. You guys have got a lifeline.
David Luiz.
You're going for David Luiz? I'm putting that down as David Luiz. Who wants to get
I'm going for... Ooh, okay, you know what? I'm going for... Wait, did he face Milan? He did. Yeah, he did face Milan. I hope he did. Unless that's my full manager. I don't care. Van Ginkel.
Okay.
Van Ginkel. Mm.
Mark?
Go. Mate, I'm out.
He's passed. All right.
Yeah, mate, I'm passed, mate.
Well, again, the house wins. Stell wins. It was not Kovacic. It wasn't Palmieri. It wasn't Van Ginkel. It's a certain Spanish midfielder that is at Southampton. Anyone want to guess his name?
Romeu.
There you go. Romeu started out of Barcelona. He only played one game, which was the Spanish Super Cup final. He played alongside Ibrahimovic, Dani Alves and Bojan. He then moved to Chelsea to play with Salah, Torres and Demba Ba. A loan move to Valencia followed, where he played with Alcázar and Senderos. He then went to Stuttgart on loan, where he played with Rudiger and Werner. And now he's at Southampton, where he's got Ryan Bertrand as his teammate.
I would have never got that in a million years.
No chance.
No, this is why I like this game, because it's good. It is good.
Well, there you go. I stumped you lot at 11 o'clock on the dot PM. Lovely.
Yeah, that's why we lost, because we're tired.
You guys can lose sleep over it. Lovely.
Yeah, mate, I've got no excuse over here.
You're recovering.
It's because you're on the other side, Mark. Don't worry.
You're recovering from
that's
Thanksgiving.
It, mate. I appreciate that.
Right, gentlemen, thank you ever so much for your time. It's been absolutely great having you guys on. Before I let you go, Twitter handles and all that other stuff. Mark?
MarkBridge6.
Superb. There you go. Kojo?
Coach Kojo, podcast free midfield, YouTube show 40_ says.
And Mr. Yan?
Yannick is J.
Superb. And that's it for us this week. We're on Twitter at Shoot Defence. We have a Facebook group page. Please feel free to join us and get involved in all the debates that we've been having recently. So until next time, guys, take care.